Hi everyone, I'm Robert, and this is Philip. We're gonna tell you about Ray, which is a system we've been building along with all the people listed here, as well as many others. So here's a depiction of the machine learning ecosystem today. There are many important computational patterns that appear in machine learning applications. We often think of training specifically, but training is part of a broader ecosystem that also includes model serving, streaming, simulation, and more. Today, each of these patterns is implemented as a standalone distributed system. And here's some examples of specific systems that people use to implement these functionalities. These systems are very powerful, but they're also very specialized. And this poses a serious challenge for cross-cutting applications that need to integrate many of these boxes together in a single application. And this is especially true in reinforcement learning, which is an area of machine learning that aims to learn how an agent can make decisions and act in a dynamic environment. As we'll see in a few slides, reinforcement learning applications often touch many of these boxes, often in a tightly coupled way. So this is the challenge that we're addressing. Building machine learning and reinforcement learning applications often involves stitching together multiple distinct distributed systems. And these systems are typically not designed to interface with one another. So this can make it challenging to move data efficiently across system boundaries, as well as to reconcile different fault tolerance models. This poses enough of a burden on application developers that many machine learning researchers and practitioners are choosing to build custom systems from scratch to support their applications instead of using existing systems. And here are some examples of specific custom systems built to support specific reinforcement learning applications. So now I'll dive into the anatomy of a motivating reinforcement learning example to show how a single reinforcement learning application can give rise to many different computational patterns. The reinforcement learning setup consists of two primary objects: an environment, which defines the problem setting. This could be a video game environment or a robotic environment. The environment has a certain state, which evolves over time. That state could be the current frame of the video game, or perhaps the pose of the robot. The other object is an agent, which takes actions in the environment. And the goal of reinforcement learning is to find a policy that determines how the agent should act in order to achieve some objective. A policy is a mapping from states to actions. So how do we actually go about learning a good policy? A typical reinforcement learning algorithm has two parts: policy evaluation and policy improvement. If we inspect the workloads under the hood here, policy evaluation is a serving workload because it takes an incoming query, here the state of the system, and returns a response, the action. Policy improvement is a training workload because it runs stochastic gradient descent or some other optimization algorithm on multiple GPUs. On the environment side, if we're interfacing with the real world, we need to process data from sensors, perhaps cameras or radar. And in many situations, we actually want to work with simulated environments because simulated environments can be cheaper, they can be faster, and they can be safer. So what we're seeing here is that a single reinforcement learning application integrates many different computational patterns together. And what I'd like to argue on this slide is that these are very diverse computational patterns and that they have different distributed systems requirements. So the goal of this slide is not to understand every single cell in this grid. What I want to emphasize is that these are diverse workloads. They have different computational models under the hood. They have ranging from compute parallel to data parallel to client server. They vary in their use of stateful versus stateless computation, and this has implications for what techniques we can use to recover from failures. And in fact, one of the core things we have to do to support all of these workloads is to unify stateful and stateless computation. They vary in their task durations, from milliseconds for a serving workload to hours for a training workload, and this has implications for the performance requirements on the back end. So because of all of this diversity, this has traditionally called for specialized systems to handle each of these workloads individually, because it's very challenging to simultaneously support everything in a single system. But now we have applications that simultaneously require everything in a single system. And so that's exactly why we're building Ray, to provide a unified framework that can support all of these. So with Ray, we're trying to move from this paradigm, where we have different components of the machine learning ecosystem appearing as distinct distributed systems, and moving to this paradigm, where we have a single underlying distributed system that's capable of supporting all of the components of the machine learning ecosystem as libraries or applications on top. And the benefit of doing this is that it enables cross-cutting applications that need to integrate many of these boxes together. We're working on building out these libraries, but in this talk, our primary work is about building the underlying distributed system that can support all of these workloads. So for the rest of the talk, I'm going to talk about how to create a computational model that can support all these workloads, and that the crux of that will be unifying stateful and stateless computation. Then Philip's going to talk about how to take that unified computational model and make it fault tolerant, and how to scale it up. So I'll start with the computational model. We unify stateful and stateless computation with two core abstractions. We use tasks for stateless computation and actors for stateful computation. I'll start with stateless tasks. So here are two Python functions. We're going to create a workload that simply calls f twice to create two values and then adds the values together. Ray, the system we're building, allows us to decorate these functions with the ray.remote decorator. Now when I invoke one of these functions, it immediately returns a future and creates a task that executes asynchronously in the background. Because the function immediately returns a future, that allows us to call it again and create a second task before the first one has finished. And this is how futures enable parallelism. We can then take these two futures and pass them as arguments into a third task, creating a dependence of the third task on the first two tasks. So from the dependency graph on the right, we can see that the first two tasks can execute in parallel, and the third task has to wait for the first two to finish before it can start. If you want to retrieve the values from the computation, you can call ray.get. So if you're familiar with composable futures, you'll know that this is a very powerful abstraction, and it can express a lot of workloads. However, one thing that it does not do is it does not enable mutable state to be shared and mutated by multiple tasks. And that turns out to be important for many machine learning applications. You may think that we can always reduce everything to the stateless setting by simply taking the relevant state and passing it around as an extra data object. And that's true in many cases. In fact, there's a performance penalty associated with doing that, but you can often do it. However, in many reinforcement learning applications, to do training, you need to work with a simulator. And that simulator may not expose its state. So in some of these reinforcement learning applications, this approach isn't practical. So the way that we encapsulate state and share it between multiple tasks is through an actor abstraction. Here's a Python class. It has a value and a method for incrementing that value. We can decorate it like before with the ray.remote decorator. And now when we create an instance of this class, that creates a new actor process somewhere in the cluster, and the actor constructor runs, which initializes the actor's mutable state, here represented by this gray box with the value 0. Then, if we invoke methods on this actor, those translate into tasks that run on the actor process and can mutate the actor's internal state. If we invoke another method, that turns into another task and can again mutate the state, incrementing the value from 1 to 2. Like before, these actor methods return futures whose values can be retrieved by calling ray.get. One thing you'll notice is that in addition to the black data dependency edges, we've added these blue stateful edges which track changes to the actor's mutable state. This is important because this addition allows us to cast actor computations into the stateless data flow paradigm. And what that means is that it allows us to use the exact same scheduling backend to reason both about data dependencies as well as actor mutation. And it also allows the exact same fault tolerance algorithms to recover from failures, both in the case of tasks and actors. So I've presented tasks and actors as two distinct abstractions, but in fact, they participate in the single unified data flow graph, and that's what allows them to be completely interoperable. So now I'll hand it off to Philip, who will talk about how we take this computational model and make it fault tolerant and scalable.
Okay, let's now talk about fault tolerance. As you all know, at large scale, both hardware and software failures are unavoidable. Ray can recover from faults transparently. We use a unified lineage-based fault recovery mechanism for both actors and tasks. Let me demonstrate that for the stateless case in the context of the previous example. So when tasks are submitted, Ray builds up a computation graph, which tracks the objects and their dependencies. This computation graph is stored in a database called the lineage store. So let's say now that in this context, we have run the computation, and now the node that stored objects X and Z goes down. The user now calls ray.get on the object Z. So Ray needs to reconstruct that object. It does this by tracing back the computation graph, in this case figuring out that the add function needs to be rerun, and in order to rerun the add function, we need to rerun F. F has no dependencies, so it can now execute, and now we have all the dependencies of add. So after executing add, we have now reconstructed Z, and we can return it to the user. Note that this is a standard lineage-based approach that is also used in other systems like Spark and Seal. In order to support actors, we have to be able to reconstruct the internal state of the actor. So let's consider this example. We have created a counter actor and then run the increment method on it. Say now, the node that contains the actor goes down, so we lose the actor state. The user now wants to call increment another time on the actor. So Ray needs to reconstruct the actor. So we can now use the same lineage-based fault tolerance mechanism by tracing back stateful edges in the computation graph. In this case, in order to reconstruct the state value equals to 1, we need to rerun the increment method. And in order to do that, we need to reconstruct the actor. So after now rerunning the constructor, we can rerun the first increment method. And then the actor is in the state that it was in before it was lost. So now we run the second increment method and conclude the workload. So note that this lineage-based fault tolerance mechanism can provide a unified way to handle failures in computation graphs that have both stateful and stateless edges. So we can reconstruct across actors and tasks. So now that we have augmented the fault tolerance mechanisms for actors, there are challenges in making this performant. So traditional lineage-based fault tolerance systems often are designed for coarse-grained tasks, supporting runtimes of minutes or seconds. These are systems like Spark or Seal. However, ML applications really need millisecond-level tasks at very high throughputs, and this places high demand on both scheduler and the lineage store. So traditionally, the lineage store is part of the scheduler and is often an internal data structure within the scheduler. In order to support the scaling requirements, we decouple them. This allows us to scale them independently and also to shard the lineage store. So let me now demonstrate how this fits into the overall system architecture. We have a number of nodes here. Each of them has their own scheduler. There is one or more drivers which initiate the computation. Tasks and actors are executed on worker processes. We support nested parallelism. That means tasks and actors can instantiate other tasks and actors. The results of tasks are objects, as we saw before, and they are stored in the object store. The scheduler will make sure that task dependencies are available locally and will instruct the cluster to transfer objects if necessary. The lineage store is a sharded Redis database which is connected to the schedulers. It contains the full execution state of the system. This makes it possible to make the other components of the system stateless, which makes the system both scalable and also makes it easier to implement fault tolerance. This architecture also allows us to easily write debugging and profiling tools and to visualize the state of the cluster in a web UI. So this architecture enables Ray to be highly scalable. We can easily support over 1 million tasks per second. We can easily support low latency tasks on the order of milliseconds, and the system is fault tolerant. So let's now look at an end-to-end application. For this, we use the motivating reinforcement learning application, consisting of simulation, serving, and training. So we evaluate Ray here on a workload called Evolution Strategies, which uses many small tasks to evaluate a policy and then collects the results and improves the policy. We compare here against the special purpose Redis-based system, which was optimized for this workload. It was implemented by OpenAI. So the comparison system is in red, and as you see, it breaks down after scaling up to 1,000 CPUs. This is because the driver here is a central bottleneck. The Ray implementation, on the other hand, can scale up to more than 8,000 cores, which makes it possible to get state-of-the-art training time on this workload. So Ray can do this because of its distributed architecture and also because of the nested tasks, which remove centralized bottlenecks. There's more benchmarks, also of more traditional machine learning workloads like parameter servers, distributed STD, and serving workloads. And check out our paper. So Ray is an open source system. It's available on GitHub. If you're interested, you should check it out. It's very easy to install. Since the initial launch in May 2017, we've had a growing number of contributors, and there's a growing number of use cases at companies. So there's many systems that are similar to the system that we are presenting, and they all have their strengths. However, each of them is missing some of the important requirements, so they can't support the full unified ML workload. So systems like Spark, Seal, or Dryad are very good at supporting stateless computation. And they are also very good at supporting data flow computation. However, they lack in their support for stateful computation. And they also are designed for coarse-grained tasks. Systems like OpenMPI and Orleans support compute-heavy workloads very well. However, they lack in their supports of data-heavy workloads and also lack some fault tolerance capabilities. So to conclude, there's a number of new AI applications which require unifying the machine learning ecosystem. We present our solution, called Ray, which unifies stateless and stateful computation. It does so while preserving transparent fault recovery mechanisms, and it is highly scalable and can therefore support the performance requirements, the heavy performance requirements for these kinds of applications well. Thanks for your attention.
Thank you, Robert and Philip. Let's open the floor for questions.
Hi, Ram Ramji, Microsoft Research. Nice talk. So you had these four functions listed there, right? Training, serving, data processing, and one more. But the biggest chunk of that is the elephant in the room there is training, right? That's taking hours. The rest are all, in general, smaller. So if I just optimize for that, how much more benefit will I get with something like this, right? Yeah. Let's say just use TensorFlow and optimize training, which takes hours. How much incremental benefit will I get optimizing for all four?
Thanks. So that's a good question. In fact, it's not just that you do these sequentially, like first you load all of your data, and then you do training, and then you do serving. But certainly, some applications look like that. But in a lot of reinforcement learning applications, the serving and the training or the simulation are actually coupled and happening together. So it is necessary to be able to do them simultaneously. This actually happens a lot in reinforcement learning where you are iteratively, you know, developing a new policy with training, and the training phase may be fairly short. And then you take that policy, you run a lot of simulations with it, and then that feeds back into itself. So it's not enough to just make the training part very quick.
Also in terms of overall time taken, both training and simulation take about the same amount of time for many workloads. So it's very important to be able to scale up both.
OK, thank you.
Hi, it's Chuzhe from Shanghai Jiao Tong University. And I was wondering, did you consider any state checkpointing mechanism for actor? So it looks to me that if a node fails that contains the current actor state, you have to re-execute the whole job flow to reconstruct the actor?
Yes. In fact, this was a little bit simplified presentation. And in practice, you can specify a checkpoint interval. After so many tasks, the actor state is going to be checkpointed. And then Ray will figure out to reload the state from the most recent checkpoint.
So the In this picture, we showed what happens when you lose all of the actor state and all the history. But having a checkpoint around would correspond to essentially not losing one of these boxes.
Oh, okay, thanks.
Hi, Paul Barham, Google Brain. I was wondering if you had any experience of how ML researchers cope with programming with futures where you might build a very deep recursive computation and then you get a failure somewhere deep in the middle of the program. How does that look to the programmer?
With with what futures?
If you're programming with futures in Ray and you build up, say, you write a recursive computation, 100 levels deep, one of the nodes raises an exception, when does that bubble up?
So it depends a little bit on how you do it. I haven't really seen applications that have nesting 100 levels deep, but because we have nested tasks, if one task launches another task and then gets its result, and the nested task raises an exception, then or fails, that will raise an exception at the caller, and it'll be handled there. So that's a common way of dealing with it. You have other situations where the caller doesn't actually wait for the result, it just launches the computation. And in that case, you either want to like transparently restart the actors if these are actor workloads, or whoever ultimately retrieves the values needs to handle the exception.
Okay, so an exception is re-raised at the get of the future.
Right.
But you need to know potentially how far down the call tree this happened, or
whoever is ultimately retrieving the value needs to handle the exception. And if it's very nested, one of the intermediate callers can handle it. It doesn't have to be handled by everyone in the stack.
Okay, thanks.
So Lin Tao Zhang from Microsoft Research. So I was wondering, when you are doing the recomputation, how would you handle the randomness, like non-determinism in your task?
If you want to exactly, so we detect non-determinism and we provide a warning to the user. But if you are re-executing these methods or these functions and they give a different result the second time, in that case, we are not providing guarantees about giving the exact same result as the first time around.
Just a very quick question. Yeah. I was thinking if the data locality is it a big concern or not in the RAID architecture? That as I remember you said, and in the paper, that you try to schedule the task locally as much as possible. But sometimes if you just schedule this task on to a remote node, you may do not need to transfer the data all around the network. And so I'm wondering.
Yeah, data locality is one thing we trade off with latency and load balancing. So it is for some workloads, it's much more important, like the standard data processing workloads. Yeah. And for others, that are more compute-heavy workloads like simulations, it's often less important.
Training?
Sorry?
Does training need this kind of locality?
So training is interesting because for the stateful computations, we're often using actors. Actor placement is done when the actor is first created. And once the actor is created, we never migrate it. So all future actor methods there are no real scheduling decisions. They have to go to where the actor is. And so the only scheduling decision there happens when the actors are initially created.
Oh, I see, thanks.